I'm a bit of a pessimist. Having published his book that shows that at least 45 million people died in the society between 1958 and 62, and many in very violent conditions. In other words, quite a number were, about 2 to 3 million were actually beaten to death, sometimes buried alive. And those who died of hunger were frequently deliberately starved to death as a way to get rid of people who were too weak, vulnerable, or old to contribute to the food chain. Knowing that, one still comes across in China the view that, despite that, China was still the man who established a new China, and he still did things that were good. It's a little bit like the argument that Hitler built motorways, and he was kind to his dog, I guess. But the view is also quite widespread in outside of China, in Europe, United States.
All right, well then let's take a chronological step back and look at how all this started. 45 million people, how do you kill 45 million people?
It's a large country, but how do you go about doing that? The first step in 1958 is to pretty much declare, as Mao does, that every man, every woman is really a soldier in a giant army. And then you use the giant army to, in one continuous revolution, you deploy your workforce that runs in the hundreds of millions to tackle one task after the other, either working on irrigation projects in the evening or smelting iron in backyard furnaces in daytime or working on the fields. Now, the problem with that approach is that once you start collectivizing everybody, as you do in the army, once you start herding people together in giant people's communes and you collectivize everything, you strip people from their land, their homes, their livestock, their tools, there's absolutely nothing left. There's no incentive to work. The profit motive is gone. The only thing that you have left is a stick. Coercion and terror are the foundation of that regime, and you must force famished people to go into the field and do work for you.
How did they coerce people?
People were, once the carrot is removed, there's nothing but a stick left. People are beaten all the time. People are forced to strip in the middle of the winter to work outside. Pregnant women.
Why would you force people to strip in winter?
You would force them to strip in the belief that they will have to work in order to stay warm. And this happened from the north all the way down to the south. Even in Guangdong province it happened. In one case, 300 people have to strip bare and work in the middle of the winter on an irrigation site. There's nothing but the stick to force people to do work. Some people have their ears chopped off, their noses lopped off. The slightest infraction is punished by drastic measures. One man called Wang Ziyo, for stealing a potato, has his legs tied up with iron wire, a 10-kilo stone dropped on his back. Somebody chops off one of his ears, and then he's branded with a sizzling tool. In Sichuan, some people are poured in petrol and set alight. A small boy, for having stolen a grain, is punished. His father has to actually bury him alive, and then the man dies of grief himself.
And you found all these things in the Beijing archives?
There are, not just Beijing, there are dozens of archives. It's a massive one-party state that, like all one-party states, meticulously compiles its own crimes. There's extremely detailed records that give you the name, the place, who did what to whom, when, and where. An extraordinary amount of documentation that shows levels of violence and coercion are widespread throughout the country. You could put it very simply, once there are no incentives to work in the countryside, villagers and party officials are locked in a spiral of violence, a mounting spiral of violence.
And how long does this go on? It begins in the late 40s.
Well, the revolution takes place, the so-called revolution takes place in 1949. So the Great Leap Forward starts in 58, 10 years after the Chinese conquest of China.
So the killing doesn't really start till the Great Leap Forward.
Indeed, 1958, and there is a retreat in 1962. So it's about 4 years of a catastrophe that destroys not just human beings, but also housing stock. In some places, Hunan province, 40% of all the housing is destroyed to create fertilizers, to straighten roads, to punish people, to build giant canteens for the people's communes.
So 45 million people in just 4 or 5 years. 10 million people a year he was killing.
That's pretty much it. Yes, and these are new statistics based on all sorts of surveys. Sometimes at the level of entire provinces like Sichuan, which is the size of France, extremely detailed surveys by the very public security bureaus themselves.
How much of this was also reinforced with mass political brainwashing?
A lot. Even before this all starts, in 1957, there is a purge carried out to get rid of party members who somehow don't toe the line. Hundreds of thousands of party cadres are dismissed and replaced by very hard, unscrupulous men who are quite willing to trim their sails to benefit from these radical winds that blow from Peking. And for the ordinary man on the street, farmers know very well that there is no point in speaking out or doing anything that might go against the grain. Falling asleep at a meeting is enough to warrant a beating. People who don't turn up in the morning in the canteen get beaten. Some of them get banned from the canteen because they don't work hard enough. Nobody wants to speak out in those circumstances.
And does the political brainwashing go on even after the Great Leap Forward is over?
1962, Great Leap Forward is over. This catastrophe doesn't quite stop. Of course, you can't just reverse a disaster of such gargantuan proportions, but at least people die in less greater numbers. But then, of course, from 1962 to 66, there's a little bit of breathing space, but 66 is the start of the Cultural Revolution.
And this Cultural Revolution then takes more lives?
It takes far less lives. It takes about 2 or 3 million, as we can tell from what has been published on that topic so far on the basis of official and semi-official sources. God knows what the archives will reveal when they're opened on that particular period.
Do you think it's possible, as Zheng Chang suggested 5 years ago in a book, that Mao's ultimate death toll could be 70 million?
I don't think that would be very astonishing. When we see the extraordinary extent of death and violence and coercion that took place during the Great Leap Forward, on the basis of these party archives, one really wonders what will come out once we can read on the Cultural Revolution. And don't forget that while I've been able to use these party archives, not all of them are open. It's only a partial opening up. Everything very sensitive in the central party archives in Beijing is still locked away very safely.
And despite all this, Mao's image is still looms over Tiananmen Square, and Mao has still not been really rejected at all by the Chinese establishment.
No, and of course he wasn't even rejected at the time. If you would speak to villagers in the middle of the Great Leap Forward who were being starved to death and who had lost family members, they themselves would tell you that Mao is a great man. And I think it boils down to a very simple device of survival. It's called hope. If everything around you is being destroyed, your house is being taken away, your tools are confiscated, your son is being forced to work in the fields, or taken away for the army, well, of course, you need to somehow get through that by hoping that the man at the very top is actually a very good man. And if only Mao knew, things would be so different. So already at the time, people do place their hope in Chairman Mao. And the establishment can't reject him either.
How important is it that the truth is finally told in China? I don't know if your book will even be allowed to be read in China.
Let's be fair. It took a while before the full truth came out about the Holocaust after the Second World War. It took a while before we started looking at the transatlantic slave trade. It took a while before we were able to confront the crimes committed by Stalin. I think it's absolutely necessary that we look at what happened in communist China after 1949, on the basis of good, credible, solid party archives, which still have to open up further. I think it's enormously important, if only for the memory of those people who died entirely unnecessarily.
But what is the consequence in present-day Chinese political life of the continuing denial?
Ignorance about not just the past, but also ignorance about what a one-party state actually does, about how a one-party state actually functions. Ignorance about the mechanisms of power and how to move away and avoid similar errors in future.
Do you think that is going to change in the near future?
It's very difficult to say.
It needs a change of leadership to do it.
Yeah, but it's not just a change of leadership. You'd need a change in the whole structure and the manner in which power is exercised.
And one last question. How difficult was it to do this work?
I've been using archives for many years. I only discovered that these archives on the Great Leap Forward were opening up in the years before the Olympics. It was a gesture of goodwill. It was some opening up there. It was very difficult to do it. Even then, people in the archives are not going to hand this over to you on a golden plate. So it was a lot of hard work, a lot of disappointment, but also some extraordinary discoveries in there. It took about 6 months in archives, or a period of 3 to 4 years to gather it all.
But there was no obstruction in the end?
There was, of course. There were places where I was not given anything at all. There were other archives in which I was given very, very, very small amounts of material that didn't amount to an awful lot. And then there were some places where there were some real, very good discoveries. As in all cases, one has to be very patient. But it's not like the Soviet Union and the collapse of the Soviet Union after 1992, an archive just opened up to all and everybody. That's certainly not the case. It's still very, very sensitive.
And will Chinese people be able to read the book?
It's being translated right now by Bo Pu, the man who also edited the Zhao Ziyang memoirs in Hong Kong. That is hope that it will be available also to people in China.
But just hope for the moment.
It's just hope. But I receive emails every day from people in the mainland and overseas Chinese telling me how eager they are to read this book.